Hey, everybody, it's Rick. And if you're enjoying the Vertafore Insurance podcast, you should definitely check out Accelerate, powered by NetView. This is our huge InsurTech conference happening in April of 2020. And it is the event to attend for everything from networking, thought leadership, learning how to grow your agency, meeting new technology partners, and much, much more. Accelerate is happening in Minneapolis from April 29th through May 2nd. And you can learn more at www.netviewaccelerate.com. That's all one word, netviewaccelerate.com.
Welcome to the Vertafore Insurance Podcast with Rick Fox. We're here to talk about the industry with some of its biggest influencers. From technology, trends, and current events, if it's happening in insurance, you'll hear about it here. Make sure to tune in every week and join in on the conversation with us on social media at Vertafore. And now, here's Rick Fox.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Vertafore Insurance Podcast, or as we like to call it, the VIP. I'm the host, Rick Fox. And today, I think we've got a topic that is in the front of everyone's mind and something that is going to be very informational. I'm extremely glad to have Amy Wanninger, the CEO of Lead at Any Level, on with us. And our topic today is diversity. Amy, welcome to the show. And let me make sure I get this right. Is it Wanninger?
That's correct. Yes. And the way I tell people to remember that, Rick, is you'll be Wanninger to come speak at your company.
I love that. I think
it is so cheesy, but people remember. So I have to use it.
I love it.
I'm compelled.
So the best way to start, you and I have had some conversations, and thank you so much for coming on. But what I really want you to do is kind of talk about your journey and how we ended up here and why you're so passionate about this particular topic that we're going to talk about today.
You bet. So I'll give you the shortest version of my life story that I possibly can, in the interest of not boring your audience to tears. I grew up in a very rural area, southern Indiana. It was very white, very homogeneous, and extremely blue collar. And what that meant for me was I didn't know anybody really who had gone to college other than my teachers and my doctor. So I thought everybody had been to college. And so what I did in my reverse engineering brain is I figured, well, the people that work as bank tellers probably majored in finance, right? Because like that's a logical assumption. If you assume people went to college and you have to match up majors with people, that's kind of where I went, right? Like I had no idea there were people that worked in banks beyond the bank tellers, like because those were the only people I ever saw, right?
Right. They were bankers.
That's right. They were bankers. And to me, most importantly, they had those little dum-dum suckers. So, you know, it was those kinds of things, right? The secretaries and the receptionists where I went, I figured they majored in business. Mm-hmm. You know, I literally thought engineering was for the guy who drove the train. Like, I just really did not know how the world worked.
Yeah.
But I went to college and found out even more that I didn't know about how the world worked. And so I thought, well, you know, I'm really interested in lots of different things. I'll just take some classes and see what sounds good because, you know, I knew that like doctors and teachers, by this time, I knew doctors and teachers went to college. And that was about it. So first I majored in pre-med. I decided that wasn't going to be for me. And I took a whole bunch of other classes just to kind of see what's what. And I ended up with my first degree. I majored in criminal justice, African American studies, and I had minors in sociology and Spanish. And my ambition, because I read about it somewhere, was to work for the ACLU.
Wow.
Look at you.
That's awesome.
And it is until I was about 20 and I found out how much law school would cost. And then about the same time I learned what the phrase pro bono meant.
Yes. There you go.
And I went, oh, I don't think I'm going to be going to law school.
Wait a minute.
Hold the phone. So I was super overqualified for a really dead-end job at the mall. And just to tell you how dead-end it was, I worked at a record store. So, you know, we were poised for greatness there.
Yeah.
And my kids don't even know what a record store is, which is hilarious. Yeah. My kid asked me one time, he's like, where did you and daddy meet? And I said, we met at a record store where we worked. He goes, what's a record store? And that was not the follow-up question I was expecting. But anyway, a couple of dead-end jobs later, this woman that I worked with said, you know, you're really good with math and you really like logic. You should go back to school for a computer science degree. And I said, you know, I don't even know how to run a copy machine. No, thank you. And then she told me about sign-on bonuses. And I said,
where do I sign up? Yeah, I'm sorry. Did I say no? I meant yes when I said no.
I meant yes. I love computers. They're my favorite thing. So I went back to school, got a second bachelor's degree, computer science major, math minor. So about as far from where I started as you could get, right? And I went and worked in IT for 20 years. And it was great. I like logic. I like solving problems. I like solving problems in a logical way. It was perfect. About 10 years into my career, I got involved in the insurance industry. I was put on a long-term project by a consulting firm that I worked for. And then, you know, I converted to the other side, right? I got hired by the company and kind of moved my way up through management, always working in systems. Well, in about 2012, I believe it was, the company that I worked for is a major carrier. They hired a chief diversity officer. And I thought, what the heck is a chief diversity officer? When I read the press release. And so I dug into that a little bit and I read what she was there to do. And I thought, ooh, you can make money doing that? Where do I sign up? Of course, nobody hires somebody out of IT to go work in the diversity office, right?
Right.
No matter how high potential I may be. So anyway, what I did instead of, you know, saying, hey, how do I get a job here? I thought, well, you know what? They're going to need a lot of help because it's a big company. And I bet if people volunteer to help, they'll let people volunteer. So that's what I did. I just nosed my way right into that department.
Good for you.
And I did everything I could think of to make myself, you know, valuable to the people that were doing this work. So fast forward a couple of years, I'm pretty embedded. Things are going, you know, not in the department so much, but we had employee resource groups and I was on the leadership team for one of those resource groups. And I was, you know, kind of dabbling in some other areas of this and still doing my day job, by the way. And about that same time, 2016, I got my PCU designation. Now, this is where high potential comes into play, Rick, because for the first time in my career in 2016, this is, for those doing the math, 16 years after I started in the professional world, I went to my very first conference. And I got a lot of questions for the managers that I had prior to 2016, why they weren't sending me to conferences. But because, you know, I'm a lifelong learner. I'm like, you know, I'm into this kind of stuff. But I didn't even know these things existed because where I come from, nobody went to conferences.
Right.
And so, you know, conference was a basketball term, right? Where I grew
up. Yeah, exactly. Especially where you grew up.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So anyway, I went to the CPCU conference. I was like, wow, this is really cool. But I was terrified. I didn't know how to network with anybody. I didn't know how to talk to people. You know, because I'd never had to do it before. Mm-hmm. And I had like this knot in my stomach the whole flight to Hawaii thinking, you know, what if somebody talks to me? What will I say? I've grown since then. And
yeah, I know, Amy. I know. just slightly come out of your shell since
just a
then.
Bit. Just a bit. So anyway, I attended the whole thing and they had some topics on diversity and inclusion at the conference. And I'm a checklist kind of person. When I'm taking notes, I actually physically draw a little box off to the side when it's something I want to do. And then I check it off when it's done. Right.
Yep.
And I'm looking through my notes and I don't have any check boxes. I'm like, this was really good theory. Right. But doesn't really like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do different when I leave here on this topic. So I decided the next year I would pitch actionable diversity and inclusion topic. That was my goal.
Okay.
And so I put together kind of three sentences and a couple of bullet points, and the CPCU Society accepted my proposal. And then I thought, oh, expletive.
Yeah. Now what?
now what do I do? Like, I don't know what right. I'm going to say. I just right. know what I want to talk about.
Right.
And so I put together, you know, I was brainstorming, I was doing all this stuff, right, to try to figure out how I was going to do it and what I was going to say. And I tried and failed. I couldn't find anything that worked. And then I came up with this matrix that I call the CHAMP matrix or the CHAMP network assessment tool. And it's all about who's in your network and who's not in your network and who should be. And I thought, oh, this is really cool, right? It's acronyms and mm-hmm, sticky mm-hmm. and I, you know, it's
insurance
like
and we love acronyms. So
right.
that works.
Like this yep. is perfect. Mm-hmm. And I took my own assessment and I was absolutely mortified.
Really?
Because everybody in my network looked just like me.
Right.
And I thought, wow, I've been calling myself a diversity champion for 5 years, like professionally, right? Mm-hmm. I'm an IT professional. I work in insurance and I'm a diversity champion. And I've got this network that looks a whole bunch like, you know, just, you know, like I put myself in that copy machine, right?
Yeah.
And just spit a bunch of me out. And I was like, I'm not living my values. And that really hurt me to my core. So I changed everything about where I showed up and who I talked to and who I forced myself to ask to be my mentor, and, you know, like really just changed the way I put myself out there.
Let me ask you a question. During that time, was that uncomfortable or did that feel natural? Because I think a lot of people struggle there. Like they struggle with the comfort of what they're used to, and not on purpose, but like to your point, the carbon copy model, if I live in San Diego and it's a pretty good melting pot here in San Diego, but I live in an area that's predominantly white. I mean, it just is. So was there a level of talk to me about the adjustment as you kind of got outside your comfort zone there and outside your box, what that felt like? Because I think people would really want to hear, you know, that part of the journey, because that's what's taking you to where you are today, right?
Absolutely. So it was the same discomfort I felt when I stepped into that conference the first day.
Okay.
Right? Because it was like, I don't know how to talk to people in this environment. I don't know what's expected of me. I don't know the rules. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. It was that same fear. And what I realized was, I don't have to say anything. All I have to do is show up and try to help. Right? Show up, listen, and try to help. Those are the three things that you have to do in any situation, right? Listen. Sure. And in that order, right, you can't try to help if you haven't already listened. And what I realized was I could show up, and if people said, what are you doing here? Which nobody ever did, by the way. Nobody ever asked me, what are you doing here? Why are you, why are you at the Latino, luncheon? Nobody ever asked me. Nobody ever asked me, why are you, you're at this education conference, first of all, that you don't belong at, because you don't have a PhD. And second, you're sitting in the breakout about, how hard it is for Black professors to get tenure. Why are you here? Like nobody's ever asked me that question.
Yeah.
But my answer, because I had to have one ready, because that's how I roll, was what I intended my answer to be is, I'm here to listen and learn. And I've actually found that if you do announce yourself in that way, that people will, first of all, not trust you at first, right? Because they'll say, okay, yeah, sure. Especially if you're going in as somebody from a dominant demographic into a community that's not been represented as well, right? In the upper echelons of the organization or the power structure.
Right.
So they'll look at you a little suspiciously at first. And then the longer you sit there and don't say anything, the more you build trust. And when you finally do say something, it should probably be in the form of a question and not in the form of an argument. And just that, just if you can go sit in a room quietly and listen, you've got like 50% of this knocked out.
Okay.
Because nobody expects you to understand where they're coming from until you've listened.
Yeah, I agree. I think that makes sense. And if you are, and I think you could translate that to anything in life, right? I mean, not just your challenges with, getting outside your box and comfort zone in this particular area, but anything in life. Shut up, listen, try to help is pretty, or show up. I said, shut up. I think you said, show up.
I said, show up.
It's show up, then shut up and listen. Right. I mean, I just want to make it a little more intense and then be there to help. I think, like in any aspect of life, that makes sense. Okay, so now you're there. You've put together a presentation. How do we get here?
The conference got canceled. Okay. After I did all this work, the conference got canceled because nobody in insurance foresaw a hurricane in Orlando in October. So then I was like, wow, this really stinks because, one, I worked hard on this, and two, like what I have is powerful. It's changed my life. And I want to help other people do what I did, right? I want to help other people have these results and get these opportunities and meet people and just, expand their perspective and expand their networks. And so I thought, well, if it's not going to be this audience, I'll just find another audience. And in 2018, I found 35 audiences. And so far in 2019, I found 41.
That's so great. It's so great. And I'm for those of you out there that don't follow Amy currently on LinkedIn, go do it this moment. Thank you. I'm even giving you permission to pause the podcast to go to LinkedIn and take care of that, because she posts such great information and it's always positive. It's very, very, I want to say informational, but I think eye-opening is a better way to look at it, because, you know, we get stuck in our ruts, right? We do our normal day-to-day work. And if we, like I've said this about business, about planning, about how to run an agency, but it plays into this too. It's, if we just take a quick step back and look at, like you said, I took a look at my network or the people that I had surrounded myself with, and noticed one common thing or a few common things that we were Xerox copies of each other. I mean, I would just highly recommend, we're going to dig in here, but I'll say it again at the end, but get on Amy's get her on your radar on LinkedIn, because there's such great content on there that she puts on, you know, multiple times a day that I am a huge fan. I told her when we started, I was very excited to record this and I didn't know that whole journey. So I am super glad to hear that. So now it's time. All right. Roll up your sleeves. Amy, are you ready? We're going to do this thing?
I'm ready.
All right, let's do it. All right. So the topic is diversity.
Yes, sir.
And I think we have two very interesting paths to talk about. Let's talk about it in two different ways. I want to set the stage. Let's actually Tarantino it and we'll go back to the beginning. But we've got diversity from a career perspective.
Yes.
And then in our industry, we have diversity from an agency perspective. I think maybe starting with the career perspective is appropriate and a good lead into the agency perspective. Would you agree
sure
with
thing.
That? Okay, yep. Let's do that. So I'm going to turn it over to you. And
Tarantino, take one.
Yeah, take one, go.
All right.
And so, action.
From a career perspective, here's what you need. You need to connect with the customers for your company, not your internal customers. I don't care what role you're in. I don't care if you work in HR or IT, or you're the person who, you know, like in the movie The Office, like you carry the copies from one building to the other and hand them to the person. Whatever your job in the insurance world, you need to find out who are the people that exchange money with your company for goods and services. And you need to get to know them, because that's how you're going to innovate. That's how you're going to stay relevant. And that's how you're going to improve what's going on inside your company. So that's first thing.
Okay.
And C is the first letter in the word CHAMP, which is my acronym for the people you need in your network.
Okay.
Very first one. And I want you to think about that for just a minute. If you're connecting with customers, and especially if you're in a non-customer facing role, and nobody else in your department even knows what a customer looks like, what's that going to do for your career?
I agree.
I mean, that in and of itself, if you do nothing else that I've ever recommended anyone do that, because that's going to make a huge difference for how you move forward in your career. And then, you know, everything else kind of flows from that. Who do you tell about job postings? Who do you recommend for promotions? Who do you bring in when there's a high profile project? If you want to have a network that's a high value network, you need to be of high value to your network. So the more you do for others, the more valuable people are going to come your way.
Yeah. And I think that goes a little bit into some conversations I know you've had, and I'll use a category of millennial. And I think there's this air of like the overarching stereotype is that there's that is a generation of entitlement. And what I'm hearing you say is the opposite of that. You're not entitled to anything. What do you offer that earns you the right to have these other people in your network? Is that a fair way to put that?
Yeah. And I wouldn't single millennials out for
example.
Yeah. I think a lot of people have a sense of entitlement, right? Like
I agree. Yeah. That's true.
That's not an age specific thing. And, you know, I would say that typically when I'm talking about middle-aged white people, because that's what I am. When we middle-aged white people talk about people who are entitled, we typically mean not middle-aged or not white people.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? Like nobody talks about the entitled 55-year-old white dude.
Yeah, right? That's true.
Like
that's
nobody does.
True. That's very true.
And so I think we need to be careful about even the word entitled, because I think it carries a connotation that there are some people who should have things and some people who shouldn't. And I don't think that's true. So pardon me for
especially,
calling you
out
on that.
No, and that's totally fine. And especially, and I agree with you. And I think the other way that I would say more times than not, the word entitled has sort of a negative connotation to it. And I think it's earned it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it really has earned it, because you don't want to be that. Like I'm you. I'm not going to put myself in middle age, because I still look in the mirror and think, wow, how do you look so young for how long you've been around? I literally say that every day. I'm kidding. No, I'm not. But
so I was watching a movie last night with my kids, and Matthew Broderick is like an old dad in the movie.
Oh no.
And I'm like, Ferris Bueller's an old dad now. And that hurt me at a very, kind of in my core. I was like, okay, if Ferris Bueller's an old dad, then I'm not frozen in time either. And damn it.
Gosh, I had the same thing. My kid the other day said, well, they met somebody or there was someone they were referring to. I'm like, well, you know, how old were they? Like, they were old, dad. They're like, you know, like you. I'm like, oh gosh. Oh,
thanks.
Thanks a lot. You go do your chores.
Bring me some Aleve and turn the TV down.
All right.
So what I'm saying is, if you're focused on your career, and most of us are, that's why we're in this industry, right? Career longevity, career stability for the most part, and lots of opportunity to move up and move around and learn new things and try new things. I mean, that's what the insurance industry offers. Yeah. And so, you know, most of us care about our careers. And if you care about your career, you need to care about your relationships. And here's what I tell people when I do my talks, and then we can circle back to the agency piece and do Tarantino take two. But when you're networking, when you're connecting with people, tell your story. And ask other people to tell their stories. Because when we exchange stories, we actually trigger this response in our bodies that creates endorphins and makes us feel good about ourselves and about the other person.
Interesting.
And the great thing about stories is stories build trust.
Right.
And we all know trust is what builds relationships, and relationships make or break careers.
Yeah, that's spot on right there. That is spot on right there.
So if you're taking notes, write this down, right? Stories build trust. Trust builds relationships. And relationships make or break careers.
I just wrote it down.
And the fastest way to build trust, I'm so glad. You're such a good student, right?
I am. Well, I never was. I am now. I wasn't back in the day, but now I am.
But you know, when the more difference between two people, the more trust is needed. Right. And the harder it is to build. So the faster we get to our stories and really listen and take time to understand where people are coming from, the faster we can build those trusting relationships. And that's where the magic happens in your career.
I think that is like such sage advice for someone at any level of their career, right? This is a, like, if you were just getting out of college and taking a hard look at the insurance industry or any industry for that matter, and looking for that first opportunity, this is incredibly powerful life lesson to learn about how to approach your career. But you know, even us old timers that have been around for a long time, just to take a pause and a thought to what we might not be doing all the way right. And I think the important part, because we know insurance agency people, they're not afraid to talk and they do tell stories. But I think what's important about that, what you said, is not only is it tell your story, but listen to someone else's story. Like that's where that breaks down. Like I've got friends that I spend less and less time with because I am tired of just hearing about them. And they don't ever seem to care what's going on with me or my family or my career or anything else. So I think this advice is so spot on to any person at any level in their career. And I'm happy we got an opportunity to share it and that people have some things they can write down. Go on. Go Perfect. Keep going. Keep preach on, Sister Amy.
All right. So, and then just real quick on the diversity piece, you know, diversity is kind of one of those things that people get, they get sort of tense when you start talking about diversity. And I see this all the time, right? And the first place I start with how far outside of your bubble are you getting is after I take people through this exercise of CHAMP and, you know, kind of who are the five people that they're closest to in their career. Then the first question I ask them is, okay, how many of those five are in a different industry from you?
Yeah.
And you see people kind of go, well, none of them, because I work with all five of them and why wouldn't I? And see, I grew up in IT, remember? So I was laid off like every 6 to 18 months.
Right.
Years.
Right.
And if the only people I knew were the five people that sat closest to me and we all lost our jobs at the same time, we were all screwed. So I learned really quickly, like, you've got to get outside of your own work group, your own company, even your own industry.
So when you say diversity, you mean it on many levels.
Like, many levels.
Yes, because everybody hears diversity and they think, well, I'm middle-aged white guy that hangs out with a bunch of middle-aged white people. And that's obviously part of it. But what I'm hearing you say now is diversifying your personal portfolio in all aspects, from industry to race to ethnicity to education, age, like everything, correct?
Everything.
Yeah. Okay.
And here's the thing. I love that you said diversify your portfolio, because I actually talk about in my book, Network Beyond Bias, I talk about there's this notion that your network is your net worth. Mm-hmm. And if you think about the investment that you make in your career, your network is probably your biggest investment in terms of your future potential, future earning potential, right?
Yeah, you're right.
And you would never put all of your money into one stock and say, well, that's my retirement fund, right? So why on earth would you put all of your network investment into one stock?
Right.
Right. One kind of person.
Yep.
It just doesn't make sense.
Okay. So putting a bow on the career perspective, I think you've given some great sort of foundational aspects to people wanting to, or people that want to get better, they want to build relationships, which again, I think you're spot on. Say relationships can make or break a career. That is a given. I mean, I don't think people think about it, but that is an ironclad lock that is true. And so put the bow on it with like that one. I mean, write that. We wrote it down. But what's like the one big thing someone can go do tomorrow that starts this process, starts to diversify their personal portfolio in all different areas? Maybe it's more than one, but just say, here's what you should go do tomorrow when you wake up.
Tomorrow when you wake up, go find thought leaders in your industry that don't look like you and follow them on social media.
I love that. That's great.
It starts right there.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, so there it is. There it is. Okay.
All right.
Write it down. All right, now I want to go to the other side and I want to talk about it. So Tarantino, take two. Now we're going to agency perspective on diversity and how that plays such an important role, not only in obviously hiring and just general culture, but how it can play into your brand and how you're perceived out in the marketplace, right?
Absolutely. So I'm going to give you some statistics really quickly.
Great. I love
more stats. More than 80% of licensed insurance professionals, licensed insurance producers are white. I don't know what the numbers are for principals, but I know that more than 80% of licensed producers are white, yet only about 65% of new home buyers are white. Now, if you're only connecting with the people that already look like you, you're missing a big opportunity. But not only that, we're talking about people being grossly underinsured, right? Because their needs are not being met. There are not enough, for example, Latino agents to serve all the Latino customers proportionately, right?
Right.
Because we're overwhelmingly white and we're overwhelmingly male in the insurance agent space. I think the number of principals, or the percentage of principals that are non-white, or is around like 5 or 6%, mm-hmm. but I don't have good data on that, but that's what I heard.
Yeah. Well, no, and the stat makes sense. Like you said, if the producers are all white but like you said, 35% of the homeowners or the people purchasing homes are not, there's a vast gap in how that smaller population could in fact service their own kind, so to speak.
Right.
But what you're saying and where I think we're going here, and I'm going to just lob this up for you, is I can't change that I'm white, right? I mean, but I can change the way that I approach the entire marketplace. So talk to me about that.
Exactly. So show up different, show up in different places. If you are a white agent in a reasonably sized community. So, you know, right now I live in Indianapolis or near Indianapolis. Indianapolis has multiple chambers of commerce. All mm-hmm. of the little communities in and around Indianapolis have their own chambers of commerce, right? But there are also chambers for women. There are chambers for African-American business owners. There are chambers for Latino and Hispanic business owners. There are chambers for LGBTQ business owners. And here's the beauty of those chambers. You don't have to identify with that group to be a member of that chamber.
Okay, talk to me more about that. So explain what you mean there.
Sure. So I'm a white woman, right? Mm-hmm. I could join the Black Chamber of Commerce in my area.
And what is, other than just getting outside my comfort zone, talk to me about, obviously I'll feel better. But that is a bit, that's a big ask. Like, I mean,
is that it is though? A, that, because think
well,
about it.
Well, it must be because no one's doing it. Well, that's why okay. I say it. Yeah. I mean, that's why I say it. So sure. if I'm looking to broaden my personal, like my soul, which is part of this, right. But also my career, talk to me about what you've seen from people that are on that journey. And the personal changes, the professional changes that are becoming part of who they are.
Let's talk about how their business bottom line changes.
Perfect.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
So let's do the math. If less than 5% of principal agents are people of color, mm-hmm. what are the odds that all of the people in the African American Chamber of Commerce are using an African American agent to insure their businesses?
Not great. Not
pretty
not
low, great. Right? Pretty low.
Yeah.
Same with Latino Chamber. What okay. I'm suggesting is, if you're a white agent and you go show up and show up repeatedly and consistently to listen and learn and build trust, odds are you're going to be the only agent there. Now, if you've built trust in this community legitimately, I'm not saying go exploit a community. But if you go in and you build trust in that community, where do you think these people, I mean, all of our relationships are built on trust. The odds that there's a, you know, a big conglomerate or a big, you know, loose affiliation of, you know, Black and Hispanic insurance agents in your community is pretty small.
Right.
Right. Because there just aren't that many proportionately. Well,
and that would also trickle down into new talent for the agency and
Absolutely.
Diversity at that level. Correct.
Absolutely. So I know NAIA, which is the National African American Insurance Association. There's Latino insurance professionals. It's the same acronym, but it stands for something different. LAAIA.
Yeah. It's a lot of vowels. They're down in Florida. I actually was with them last week. Great people.
Yeah. LAAIA. But they have job boards and they have all kinds of networking opportunities.
Okay.
If you're looking for somebody, you know, let's say you've got a large Hispanic population in your area and you need somebody who is bilingual, probably LAIIA would be a great place to post your next job opening. Right.
That's very true.
So I think people need to think differently about this. And I'll give you another example that's a little bit different. You know, as a woman, I've bought a number of cars. I've bought, you know, I own my own business. And I buy things, right? Like that's my job kind of. And I notice sometimes men talk to my husband and not to me, even though I'm the one that's going to write the check. 65% of principal agents are male. But women influence 70 to 80% of all purchasing decisions.
That number is 99% in my house.
Just well, there so you go. Clear.
Yeah, yeah.
It's 100. You just don't know because she's good at tricking you and thinking you're making a decision sometimes.
You're probably right. You're probably right.
So, you know, if women don't feel comfortable in your agency, they're not going to buy from you. Or they're going to buy from you now and they're going to leave as soon as they can. Right.
Right.
Now, if you think about that, just that little piece, and now think about all the other differences in the way people may show up in your agency as potential customers, if they don't feel comfortable and they don't feel welcome, why on earth would they buy from you? And so my argument about, you said, well, it's a big ask to ask somebody to go to the Chamber of Commerce. So, you know, why would somebody straight go to the LGBT Chamber of Commerce? Well, you're asking people to come into your agency. and they don't know you and they don't know what you're about. And if you don't feel comfortable going, meeting them where they are, why would you expect anybody to feel comfortable meeting you where you are?
I think that is, again, it's extremely, like, it's thought provoking for me, because like I read your stuff on, when you post good content on LinkedIn, and I get a sense for that. But when you really sort of, you know, crystallize it for me, it's extremely interesting. And it's what we love about our show, is this thought provoking kind of way of thinking that people can take to their day and see if they can make themselves more successful, better people, just a little more knowledge that they didn't have. So I think that's great. Do you want to put a bow on this? Like, is there a main takeaway, like 30-second kind of closer to just sort of that really make hammer it home for everybody?
Yeah, stop being so damn comfortable.
God, I love that. Well, actually, dang it, you probably answered the question I was going to add. My big question. Okay, so let me ask the question.
Ask the question.
Okay, so it's the time capsule question. All right, we're gonna record just this next piece, and we're going to bury it. And someone's going to dig it up in a month or in a year. And I want Amy Wanninger's one big piece of advice for the insurance industry. Go.
Go to the meeting that's not for you.
That's it. Simple.
That's it.
Easy. Go to the meeting that's not for you.
Yep.
I love it. I love it. Amy, I want to do a little more connection here for you and for people out there that want to learn more. Obviously, like I mentioned before, definitely go follow Amy on LinkedIn. She has just an oodles and oodles of information and content that she posts. And it's just a very positive, like every time I come across one of her posts, it's just extremely positive. So that's one way. Amy, tell us how we get a hold of your book, which is called Network Beyond Bias. I think it's a great read. I know someone who has read it. I'll be honest, I haven't yet, but I plan to.
Okay.
How do we find it?
You can find it at networkbeyondbias.com, and it's also available on Amazon or wherever books are sold.
And I talked about LinkedIn. Is that the best way for people to reach you? Or
yeah, LinkedIn is great. I'm Amy C. Wanninger. If that's too hard to spell, don't worry about it, because I've given Rick a link that he can put in the show notes, and you can follow that link out to my website. You can get a free download of 21 insights for diversifying your network and improving your career. And, you know, then you'll get all of these wonderful weekly tips in your inbox, and, we can get to know each other better that way.
That sounds great. And so after you go, if you haven't already, after you go subscribe to the podcast, go back to the notes, find the link, go get 21 tips. I mean, that's free stuff right there. And like I said, follower Amy, so much great information. I'm so appreciative of you, and not only that your position in this industry and your positive attitude, but coming on the show and dropping some knowledge on us. The Hoosier girl makes it good, I guess, huh? Is that fair to say?
I sure hope so. I'm sure trying. Thank
well,
you so
we'll
much,
hopefully Eric. Have you back. Thanks for being on, Amy. We appreciate you. All right, everybody out there, make sure to subscribe. Give us the comments. Go get me on LinkedIn and give me comments personally, or people you might think should be on, and like and rate the show. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. And we will see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Vertafore Insurance Podcast, and tune in next Thursday for a brand new episode. You can find more episodes at vertafore.com under the Resources tab or wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you subscribe, and if you enjoyed this episode, share it on social and spread the word. Don't forget to join in on the conversation and recommend future guests by messaging us at Vertafore.